Here goes into television and investigates the humour of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
I once lived in a semi-detached house with very, very thin walls. Now, I didn't mind hearing the neighbours' radio all the time, but we could see their television as well. They do say that television is killing the art of conversation. I went round to a friend's house the other day, and the whole family was gathered round the box, gawping. The only one who spoke was the budgie. It said, "Shut up, sit down, it's on." Did you hear about the poor lady who couldn't go shopping? Her TV set had broken down, she didn't know what to buy. Two girls were talking, and one said, "Do you prefer watching television or going out with your boyfriend?" The other one said, "There's not much in it, really. Either way, I get a lot of interference." Some late-night TV chat shows are so infantile, it's criminal to keep them up so late. The boys down the factory call her Telly because she never had much on Saturday nights, and she often gave repeat performances on Sundays. The woman said, "I used to like television, but all the violence has put me off. Every time I switch on Crossroads, my husband clouts me."
It's now an established fact that watching television is the most popular leisure activity in this country, far exceeding the attractions of sport, model making, reading, or anything else. The hold of the medium is so strong that it's sometimes difficult to imagine how people filled their evenings before its invention. The effects of this massive popularity are far-reaching. Television has its influence on every aspect of life, even health. A doctor has recently described the condition as television tummy. Apparently, sitting and eating, slumped in front of the box for hours on end, has very nasty effects on our stomach muscles. But there's a strange thing about television. Despite its popularity, no one has a good word to say for it. Perhaps people take so much the technological miracle for granted that they're no longer impressed. They simply feel that if entertainment appears in their sitting rooms, they're entitled to criticise it savagely. Or it may be that they fear that the compulsive habit of television viewing is threatening to take over their lives. In the words of Orson Welles,
"I hate television. I hate it as much as peanuts. And I can't stop eating peanuts."
Other people have been equally dismissive of the medium. A prophecy by C.P. Scott.
"Television, no good will come out of this device. The word is half Greek and half Latin."
Al Witten.
"Television has brought mediocrity within everyone's reach."
A definition from Fred Allen.
"Television, a device that permits people who haven't anything to do to watch people who can do anything."
And a rather backhanded compliment from Sam Goldwyn.
"Why should people go out and pay money to see bad films when they can stay at home and see bad television for nothing?"
Bad films for nothing. It sometimes seems that nobody has a good word to say for television, but no one denies its power.
Television, television.
I'm sick of it.
Television, television.
Hey, Mr. General Public, do you realize that we got a generation here of staring eyes? The women never bother getting housework done. They just sit around talking at television. Kitties never run and playing out of door. On top of that, they never reading books no more. You ask them who's the father of our countryman. They say was either Walt Disney or Ed Sullivan.
Oh, television, television. I'm sick from looking on television.
I got the weak in the eyes, weak in the head likewise, from sitting and looking on television. Children of the country eat their dinner, you bet, but they eat it sitting in front of the TV set. They got pudding in their ears from the north to the south, from eating while watching and missing their mouth. Last night a very unusual thing occurred. naughty baby, he is saying his very first word. I have him on my shoulder for to make him burp. Instead, he open his mouth and say, Wyatt Burp.
Oh, television, television, I'm a sick from a looking on television.
I got the weak in the eyes, weak in the head likewise, from sitting and looking on. Sing it again, man.
Television, television,
oh. Likewise, from sitting and looking on television, videotape
television,
may help somewhat,
television,
but is it art?
Television,
don't make me laugh.
Stan Freeberg. Television is a new medium and is still making advances in both technology and style. Part of the reason for the volume of criticism on the subject is probably that it's still developing and still sorting out its own identity. As an anonymous wit put it,
they say TV is still in its infancy, which helps to explain why you have to get up so much and change it.
E.B. White commented in the early days of the medium,
it must have been 2 years ago that I attended a television demonstration at which it was shown beyond reasonable doubt that a person sitting in one room could observe the nonsense in another.
Incidentally, it's called a medium because most things on it are neither good nor bad. They're just a medium. But it is easily the most important way to achieve instant fame. At its best, it does introduce the eminent to the public. In the words of Gore Vidal,
television is now so desperately hungry for material that they're scraping the top of the barrel.
Here's a typical remark from Noel Coward.
Time has convinced me one thing. Television is for appearing on, not for looking at.
What about those professional artists who appear on television? What's it like for them? Here's what Max Wall said about it.
Oh, yes, it's not easy, you know. I mean, they ring you up, they ring your agent and say, want to do a television show next month, you see, so you go away and it takes you 2 weeks to write an act. And then you try and learn it. Then you go on to rehearsals. For 3 weeks you rehearse, some dingy rehearsal room somewhere, 5 days a week for 3 weeks, 9 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, you learn it. Then comes the day, you report to the studio, 9 o'clock in the morning, under the hot lights, you sweat. You go through it once, twice, five, six times, repeating, 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 stopping, starting. And then comes the moment, the show's about to commence. On go the lights, the sound, the cameras. You do your performance, you stand there in front of the television cameras, and the camera divides your picture into the primary colours of red, green and blue by means of a prism, into the plumbicon tubes where it's transformed into a varying electrical waveform, and the pulses go through the cable via the studio control gallery, then by a microwave link to the transmitter. And then it goes into the klystron through the feeder to the mast, for when it's transmitted through the air to some suburban house aerial, where the signal goes down the coaxial cable into the television cathode ray tube, and the electrons bombard the screen into 625 lines to reform the picture of you there in the living room, on the television set, in that suburban home. And for all you know, the people might be out.
The most common way that celebrities appear on television is in the chat show, a format in which few people appear at their best, as demonstrated on The Kevin Mousetrap Show.
Thank you very much. Well, we've got a wonderful, marvellous, super-terrific show tonight, and you'll be meeting some wonderful, marvellous, super-terrific people. So straight away, here's the first wonderful, marvellous, super-terrific guest star celebrity personality on the show, me. And tonight we were hoping to have on the show His Highness King Otto of Liechtenstein, a really wonderful, marvellous, super-terrific monarch, but unfortunately he's slightly absent, and so instead, here's that great trade unionist, Sir Reginald Bucket. Reggie? Tell me, what's it like being King of Liechtenstein, Reggie?
Well, I ain't the King of Liechtenstein, am I?
Super, super, no. Well, let me put it another way. I mean, the point is, what's it like not being the king of Latin Sun?
Well, it's not changed me in any way.
Well, that's certainly good news. And now, here's the bad news. We've just heard that following the recent coup in Luxentine, Reg Bucket is now, in fact, king. How about that, King Reg?
Well, this is all news to me, isn't it?
Well, that's the first civil war we've actually had on the show, and I hope you... this brings me to our next guest, philosopher, wit, traveller, and appalling old bore, Arnold P. Totteridge.
Good evening. How do you do? Do you?
Good evening.
And a good evening to you too, sir. To you too. How do you do? Yes.
Terrific. Mr. Totteridge, what I want to know is, basically, should priests be free to take drugs?
I've written a book, you know.
Super. Now, basically, the point is, a lot of people must have said to you, I mean, basically, in a word, would you sell your house to a gorilla?
Good evening.
Good evening. Super.
And a good evening to you too, sir. Yeah, I've written a book, you do.
Yes. Now, leaving the book aside for the moment, how do you plead? Guilty or not guilty?
No, thank you.
That's the wrong answer. Good, super. Can you come back next week? Wonderful, marvellous, super, terrific. Now, I'll just say goodbye.
Hello.
Well, now, this is where I walk among the studio audience and chat to them quite casually on their sort of level. And here in the front row, I see we have a little old lady, and it's Mrs. Minnie Gooseacre.
Oh, however did you know that, Kevin?
Well, I know quite a lot about you, Minnie. In fact, I know you have a brother in Canada.
Oh, yes, I have.
Terrific. And I also know that you haven't seen him for 27 years.
No, I haven't.
Well, just think of that. A brother all those miles away in Canada that you haven't seen for 27 years. Well, tonight, Minnie, surprise, surprise, we've just heard that he's been run over by a bus. Quick, get the camera on it, quick. Good, super.
That was John Cleese and the I'm Sorry I'll Read That Again team. That raises one of the arguments that's always levelled against television, that it trivialises in the constant search for novelty and sensation. Here's a quote from Richard G. Stern.
Anybody can shock a baby or a television audience, but it's too easy and the effect is disproportionate to the effort.
While it's easy to shock, it's more difficult to go on shocking. And that's what television is accused of, weakening the impact of suffering or other emotion by constant repetition. That's another reason why some people are so vehement in their hatred of the medium. But in some cases, the motive for criticism is less worthy. It can be just snobbery, as in this letter to the listener.
Speaking personally, I would never contemplate the notion of watching a television program because the idea that I might be doing exactly the same thing as 20 million other people is repulsive to me.
Yeah. Of course, one shouldn't condemn anything unseen. That's mere prejudice. One has to watch television before forming an opinion on it. Follow the example of James Thurber.
About once a month after dinner, I gird up my loins, such as they are, take as deep a breath as I can, throw my shoulders back as far as they will go, walk into the room with a television set, boldly turn it on, picking a channel at random, and then see how long I can stand it.
With practice, of course, one can stand it all evening. And part of the attraction is the people, the familiar faces. It looks a glamorous life out there on the little screen. No wonder everyone wants to be a television star. Shepherd Mead.
If you have no talent or no special ability, if you are plain, stupid, or even a little repulsive, you need not be discouraged. Some of the people who've become richest in television are people just like you.
For sweeping, perhaps, because the success in television is sometimes, in fact, frequently, the result of a lot of hard work. And it really shows when an amateur is put into that professional setting. It doesn't happen so much now, but they used to have a lot of programs in which learned professors who've just returned from trips of exploration would comment on the film which they'd taken. Let's hear one such professor commenting on the seven lost cities of the Incas.
Here you see us arriving at the first of the seven lost cities of the Incas. As you can see, there's quite a bit of excitement here as we arrive. It happened they had a total eclipse of the sun, and it coincided with our arrival. And the superstitious natives began to pray to us as sun gods and begged us to please return the sun to their skies, well, which we did. Well, as I say, we didn't have too much time to spend in any one village, so here we are off the next morning and arriving late that afternoon at the second of the seven lost cities of the Incas. Here you see us being greeted by the chief. They had a rather strange custom in this village of providing each male visitor with a bride for his stay. We tried to explain to them that this was not the custom in our country. However, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. We spent a total of 2.5 weeks in this village. Which only left us one day in which to cover the other five lost cities, but thank you very much.
This is Bob Newhart. How different from our own dear Mr. Attenborough. In spite of all the knocking that television gets, there's much to be said in its favour. Apart from the breadth and variety of entertainment it offers, it can also serve certain social functions. Here's an extract from a letter to the Daily Mirror.
Three of my children went to approved schools for minor offences. Another was beginning to go the same way until I got a TV on the HP. The boy became as good as gold. He started to go to church after watching services on television and would not go out even when we wanted him to. Since the set went back because of non-payments, he has reverted to his old ways.
Sad one, isn't it? Apart from just keeping youngsters off the streets, television can play a more positive role in their upbringing. Here's a suggestion from a letter printed in John Bull.
As children seem to take notice of everything they see on television these days, it would set a great example to us all if the saying of grace before meals was incorporated into the food advertisements.
And then there's the entertainment, which is often much better than this remark by Franklin P. Jones would suggest.
Poor reception is about the only way you can improve some television programme.
Think of the range of what television offers, though. News, sport, drama, discussion, serials, children's programmes, and, of course, light entertainment. Television invests an enormous amount of effort and money in making people laugh. Some feel that this development has been at the expense of live theatre and music hall. Here's a famous remark from Fred Allen.
Vaudeville is dead. Television is the box they buried it in.
But the medium can rise to the big occasion with its variety shows. Not talking about the Eurovision Song Contest, but think of the endless entertainment of Christmas. Here's a line from Willis Hall and Bob Monkhouse.
Christmas is a three-day television festival dedicated to the birth of Bing Crosby.
In recent years, those 3 days seem to have spread to about a fortnight. But television doesn't just concentrate on the big occasions. It keeps up a constant flow of new material all the year round. Well, except for the summer, when it keeps up a constant flow of repeats. But all the year round, you can watch all those soap operas and those endless, identical American crime cop series.
The legend you are about to hear is true. Only the needle should be changed to protect the record.
This is the countryside. My name is St. George. I'm a knight. Saturday, July 10th, 8:05 p.m. I was working out of the castle on the night watch when a call came in from the chief. A dragon had been devouring maidens. Homicide. My job. Slay him. You call me, chief?
Yeah, it's the dragon again. Devouring maidens. The king's daughter may be next.
Mm-hmm. You got a lead?
Nothing much to go on. Say, did you take that .45 automatic into the lab to have him check on it?
Yeah. You were right.
I was right?
Yeah. It was a gun. 8:22 p.m. I talked to one of the maidens who had almost been devoured. Could I talk to you, ma'am?
Who are you?
I'm St. George, ma'am. Homicide, ma'am. I want to ask you a few questions, ma'am. I understand you were almost devoured by the man. Is that right, dragon?
It was terrible. He breathed fire on me. He burned me already.
How can I be sure of that, ma'am?
Believe me, I got it straight from the dragon's mouth.
11:45 p.m. I rode over the King's Highway. I saw a man. Stopped to talk to him. Pardon me, sir. Could I talk to you for just a minute, sir?
Sure, I don't mind.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a knave.
Didn't they pick you up on a 903 last year for stealing tarts?
Yeah? So what, do you want to make a federal case out of it?
No, sir. We heard it was a dragon operating in this neighborhood. We just want to know if you've seen him.
Sure, I've seen him.
Mm-hmm. Could you describe him for me?
What's to describe? You see one dragon, you've seen them all.
Would you try and remember, sir, just for the record? We just want to get the facts, sir.
Well, he was, you know, he had orange polka dots.
Yes, sir.
Purple feet, breathing fire and smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And one big bloodshot eye right in the middle of his forehead, and, like that.
Notice anything unusual about him?
No, he's just a run-of-the-mill dragon, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir, you can go now.
Hey, by the way, how are you going to catch him?
I thought you'd never ask. A dragon net. 3:05 p.m. I was riding back into the courtyard to make my report to the lab. Then it happened. It was a dragon.
Hey, I'm the fire-breathing dragon. You must be St. George, right?
Yes, sir.
I see you got one of them new .45 caliber swords.
That's about the size of it.
Hey, you slay me.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about.
What do you mean?
I'm taking in a 502. You figure it out.
What's the charge?
Devouring maidens out of season.
Out of season? You never pinned that rap on me. Do you hear me, cop?
Yeah, I hear you. I got you in a 412, too.
A 412? What's a 412?
Overacting. Let's go.
On September the 5th, the dragon was tried and convicted. His fire was put out, and his maiden devouring license revoked. Maiden devouring out of season is punishable by a term of not less than 50 or more than 300 years.
There's another piece from Stan Freeberg. I suppose the great power and the great danger of television is its mesmeric quality, which can sap the will to do anything at all. It has far-reaching consequences, as evidenced by this report from the Leicester Mercury.
Latest victims of television? Leicester's public conveniences. So many people now stay at home at night that takings all over the city have fallen by about 12%.
And some people do seem to be completely lost without their sets. I suppose they're terrified of having to fall back on primitive amusements like conversation. Here's a report from the Daily Herald.
A couple returned early from their honeymoon yesterday because the cottage where they were staying didn't have a TV set. The 21-year-old husband, John Johnson, said there was nothing at all to do but eat and sleep.
Oh, well. It must be very confusing for people with that kind of attitude to encounter anyone who doesn't share their opinion. Here's a heart-rending mother's plea from the Daily Mirror.
How can I get my 2-year-old daughter interested in television? We sit her in front of the set, she watches for a minute and says, "Switch it off, Mummy." I should hate to think that my daughter will grow up uninterested in TV.
Yeah, it's hard to resist the power of television. But just before we go, let's hear an epitaph on a television personality.
When he was appearing on This Is Your Life, his head and a camera were in collision, which was rather sad for the poor man's wife, but it did make super television.
And that's it. Next week, another live, on-the-spot, up-to-the-minute, pacey report on the subject of radio. Until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh, another repeat.
Frank Muir Goes Into Television was produced by Simon Brett and John Davis.